Hello!
Welcome once more to Reckless Attack, a 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcast. I am, as ever, your benevolent, your humble, your appreciative GM Nathan, here at the table with the lovely, lovely cast. Hello, cast.
Hello.
Slash Hi. Players.
It's
slash
me.
Beautiful friends.
It's me.
It's Mario.
Why don't you go around and introduce yourself, starting with the person across the table from me.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jonathan, and I play Checkers, the Grung Druid, and his trusty frog pals, Mango and Junior. But not today.
Probably.
Probably not.
Yeah. We'll see.
Statistically,
I mean,
yeah. Unlikely.
Yeah.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sophie, and I normally play Valeska Carter, the human asterisk, cleric asterisk of the Arcana Domain. And I have chosen to build in a rich medical fiction.
Yeah.
Sophie made it very clear immediately after we recorded the first episode of this arc, where it's like, Nathan, just so you know, I have like a lot of information and backstory on like all of this. And it's just as grown, I think. And may all GMs be so blessed.
I've really been like looking up emergency medical procedures and be like, how do I put this in a fantasy realm where like penicillin doesn't exist? Yeah, right.
But magic does. Yeah.
But who are you playing, Sophie?
All of the Bonettes.
The hive
well,
mind.
I guess not all of them. Nathan and I are splitting the Bonettes, but also I will be playing Bonesaw!
You won't be. You won't be playing Bonesaw.
Damn it!
You fucked it up.
You gotta do it again.
Sawbone is ready!
Sawbone does not sound ready.
No, I really lost it after the first one. Never again can I.
That's why you are also playing his alter ego.
Henry Smith.
MD. Yes.
Yeah, Dr. Henry Smith, Dr. MD, who has a very Sophie-sounding voice most of the time.
Yes. And across the table from me.
Hi, everyone. I'm David, and I play Kaskrin Brightmane, a Dwarven Sorlock. Or at least I would, if I had any. Also, we are 2 hours late to recording today.
We're not late.
No.
Yes,
correctly. We are 2 hours into our recording because all of us ate a lot of cookies and we are all riding a very extreme sugar high.
This is going to be a great episode for the next 15 minutes.
And to my left.
Hi, everyone. My name is Steve and I am playing Sylv Asterlin, the Dragonborn Monk. And only Sylv Asterlin, the Dragonborn Monk.
Indeed.
Today.
At least we hope so.
Yes.
That's the plan
that
going
is the
in.
Plan
we'll
going
see
in.
How things shake out. Things are a bit intense, a bit dire, a bit chaotic at the moment for Sylv. Because Sylv, you were supposed to be in the middle of a very cool martial arts tournament.
One might even consider it calming. And relaxing.
Yeah, or at
it
least,
is an exhibition.
Exactly. At least very informative. You know, it's almost like a networking event for people who professionally punch and kick people.
Yes.
And, well, that's not really how it is fully shaped out. You definitely have made some connections.
Mostly with my fist.
Indeed. But some intrigue that I would say has now escalated into... Like, it's gone from an intrigue movie to a thriller movie at this juncture. Things are happening here... At the abbey at the foot of a giant volcano in the mountains of fire. You have been investigating a little bit. You found one of the carts in the caravan you came in on had some strange markings and some poison vials inside of it. You have delivered a few samples of that poison over to the medical tent and the Bonettes. And right as you were leaving the medical tent after dropping off these samples, you saw a guard of the abbey be brought in by a panicked number of other guards who was also crying purple tears and foaming red and purple at the mouth.
Get him in here. Get him on the bed. Colette, bring the tray over here. Lizette, get suction. And then you just hear like a ripping as the Bonettes like rip and cut open the gi of this monk to get to their chest to make sure, like, as they're checking this monk's airway, checking their circulation, like, doing everything that they need to do to quickly assess this person.
Ooh, even though I'm in prison, I'm gonna get blamed for this, aren't I?
Since they're taking off the gi, I want to just take a quick look at this guard's body just from where I am. Is there any obvious cut or stab or anything that looks like the way the poison may have been delivered?
Give me a perception check.
11.
Actually, Selv, something does stand out to you. You see, whether it be a tattoo, a symbol, a necklace, battle scars, something of a, I suppose, kindred mission. Someone who not only practices the martial arts of this abbey, you kind of the Kavos bruising style of punching until they don't move anymore, but also of elementalism, which you know to be a sign of something. Now, what does that mean to Selv, and what does he see?
It's a tattoo. And there is a tattoo that is right above the guard's heart. It's multicolored, and it kind of alternates between solid colors and more of a weird ink that might have been used that gave a metallic sheen to it. It's almost like it's 10 different colors. It goes from white all the way to red. So white, black, green, blue, and red. And then also different colors of gold, silver, bronze, copper, and brass. And that symbol is the symbol that the guardians of dragon eggs use. And that is why Selv recognizes it. Because he was also trained in the monastery, and with the elemental forms that he uses are trained, that is specifically the style of the guardians of those eggs.
I do want to ask, actually, does, like, Selv's tattoo react at all? Or is it just like ink tattoo?
Or does Selv have a tattoo? No,
actually, Selv does not have it.
Okay. Ooh, okay.
But he recognizes it. Unfortunately, that also means that if the guard that should be guarding the egg has been poisoned, then probably the attack on the egg or the scheme to get the egg is in motion.
But before you can make it out of the medical tent, Selv, you hear a commotion coming from the other end of the tent where you know Kimberly was being treated. And it sounds violent. It sounds like there is a fight going on in the back there, and you just hear cries of, "What are you doing? Who are you? Let go of me!" As you see Suzette Bonnet being thrown...
The very old one?
Being thrown across. Okay.
Suzette Bonnet absolutely fucking not will be caught by a patient. She is too experienced to get that close to a hostile patient.
That's how powerful Kimberly is, alas.
As Suzette Bonnet hurls Kimberly across the medical tent. Yeah. And you just
suplexes Kimberly onto the ground.
Just, yeah, the
breaks
body,
their spine in half.
And you just the lizard folk body of Kimberly just flies out in front of you, crashing into the fantasy stethoscopes.
What's real at this point? does it matter? Is anything real?
This is what matters to
me. Okay, great.
Yvette can be absolutely tossed somewhere, and then Suzette will just be in the background of like, Kimberly, calm down.
Okay. I'm just imagining like a volleyball game where Yvette sets up Kimberly and then Suzette just like
comes
jumps
for the
up
spikes.
And spikes
yeah.
her
yeah.
under the ground.
Some
amount
Guys,
of
I can never make cookies again.
Some amount of whatever we've talked about has transpired and Kimberly lies broken in front of you. But
I like that then we've canonically been like, oh yeah, the Bonettes will absolutely fuck up a patient who has woken up from a medically induced coma who is confused about who they are, where they are, and will just absolutely crumple them up like a piece of paper and throw them in the garbage.
Yeah. They will not. They will treat that patient with kindness and care.
I want Suzette Bonnet to knock someone out with a pipette.
Okay.
That'd be a big-ass pipette.
What you hear, Selv, is Kimberly basically stating, who are you? What are you doing? Let go of me. And that kind of like triggers something in your mind, because you know that Kimberly has seen the Bonettes before. Like, Henry Smith, MD, is also there, and you know that the two of them have met. So either like Kimberly is waking up from something unfamiliar and just is reacting, or like they are missing some chunk of the last couple hours, couple days, where they would have met Henry Smith and Suzette. And that is further confirmed by the fact that they actually look up at you, Selv, kind of hiding under your monk robe. And you just see this, like, with your passive insight, this blank stare of they do not recognize you.
I am not as attached to Henry. He can be thrown anywhere he wants.
Okay.
I would die for Suzette.
Okay, so whatever happened to Kimberly is affecting their memory. And they don't remember at least the past several hours. When did they meet?
Days. Days. They met days. Henry at lunch with the student.
Right.
And they met you on the road, and they don't seem to recognize you either.
Does Kimberly look like they're okay other than the memory loss?
And the broken spine.
Yeah, it depends on how many broken bones the Bonettes caused. But
the
yes.
Bonettes canonically did not break any bones of Kimberly's. Kimberly is physically fine. The Bonettes are using calm, low tones to convey information at a slow and steady pace to a patient who is confused.
That's when Nonette Bavette, who is the behavioral kind of specialist, is there to kind of implement some de-escalation practices.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, as long as they're safe and everything looks like it's being handled, I'm now on a time crunch. I am going to sneak my way out the opening that Suzette had pointed out before. And once I am outside, just based on what I know about my monastery, I am going to head towards where I think the location of the egg would be in this monastery. Based on that, I'm guessing towards the center in a relatively solid building and something that looks like it has enough bedrock underneath it where something could go down and they could keep like a safe vault or chamber.
You book your way across the grounds of this place, and you are kicking up ash as you are going. Your eyes are scanning for anyone that you recognize. Kavos, even. Dare I suggest?
That wouldn't be the worst thing, because I know he's quick and can get word out.
You don't see anyone as you make your way to your best guess of where this might be, knowing that time is against you, because you head straight for a building we have not explored on this on screen yet, the actual Abbey. Of the whole place is kind of referred to as the Abbey colloquially, but there is a building that is the Abbey. Interestingly, and perhaps suspiciously, you don't see any guard activity around this central building.
All right, I'm going to hurry up and move into the Abbey.
Inside of this is, for the most part, extraordinarily plain. Some would say Spartan and uncomfortable. There are many benches lined up. There is a very simple kind of dais and like pulpit up front. It is very chapel-y, even though it is very large. And there's also no art anywhere. Well, that's not 100% true. There's one art. There is a single art, but it is very large. So you can kind of interpret this how you will. Looming above these pews, casting not a shadow, but instead casting a reddish-orangish light that you no doubt would have seen on your approach had this been in the evening, is a, and I say this word, meaning both the flavor and the literal mechanical definition of a gargantuan red dragon. You can tell that it is a sculpture. Or, God, it better be. Other than the fact that it is not moving, it seems to be made from the tip of its tail all the way to the pointed, giant, spear-like teeth that are hovering over you right now. Seems to be made entirely of free-floating lava.
Oh, I wish I had more time.
With your passive perception, you start noticing people who aren't looking at you, as if they were pointedly looking nonchalant and trying to blend into the crowd, so to speak. And maybe these people are keeping an eye on things, say for, I don't know, accused poisoners.
I'm going to try to just walk down the middle of the street like I am supposed to be there and move quickly as if I had some purpose, which I do.
Give me a performance or deception roll.
10.
So, Steve, as you may recall, last episode, you were going about some skill challenges wherein if you had a certain number of failures, you would be noticed. And I hate to break it to you, but that was the last
success.
The last failure. Oh. Because you begin to see some of those people who were pointedly not looking at you just a moment ago, looking really pretty right at you. And a couple of them start to move towards you.
Well, dang it.
I will stop temporarily, but I'm going to look for anything that looks like it was out of place or moved or anything like that.
Perception check.
13.
You are trying to look around. You are not sure of anything at this point. It's such a large space. Nothing jumps out at you. The only egress that you can see is forward through a door and dark hallway that is positioned squarely underneath the dragon's tail behind the pulpit and dais up at the front.
Then I am going to take off towards that, and I'm actually going to jump the dais and the pulpit and to land on the other side and head out the door before the guards can kind of catch up to me.
Yep. Now their voices are starting to echo through this. I should have described it. This building is also made of obsidian and black stone. And so all of your footfalls and all of now their voices calling out are echoing everywhere. You run towards this door through this hallway, and there doesn't appear to be any doors along the side of it. It just continues backwards. Do you have dark vision?
I do not.
Okay. Roll me a dexterity saving throw, please.
Ooh, 25.
You just barely managed to swerve out of the way as a mortal-sized person is just standing in this hallway. You would have run into this person had you not kind of caught yourself right at the last second and kind of spun out of the way.
Do they react at all?
I mean, it's so dark in here. I'm actually going to say there is no light in here. So you can't even fully tell.
I will reach into a pouch and take out the fortunate helmet that Checkers had given us and pull the helmet up and have the light come out as continual light on it.
There's this pause where you reach for it and turn the light on quick. And in front of you, very suddenly, is a guard that is staring straight at you with a blank look. There is a moment, Self, where you actually realize, oh, wait a second, I think I've seen this guard before. No, I mean, he didn't really have a blank stare at the time. It was more kind of like a look of panic and like controlled desperation.
Was it one of the guards from the medical tent?
It was one of the guards from the medical tent. The face looking back at you is the face of the guard that brought the individual who had been poisoned over to the medical tent, yelling for help.
And is now blankly staring.
Is now blankly staring directly at you. As voices and footsteps continue to echo louder and louder coming towards you, you see not any evidence of anything on this guard or at his feet or anything like that, but actually on the wall immediately behind him. This place doesn't seem like it has a lot of use. And really, most surfaces here have some amount of ash, even the ones that are deep inside, such as this one. On a segment of wall, you see what appears to be fresh handprints, like someone was doing something to this section of wall that this person is now standing right in front of.
Can I reach the wall behind this person?
You touch the wall, and you feel a little give in this section of the wall, as if there's a switch. As you go to push it, in a blur of motion, the guard who is standing here draws both of their swords from their sheaths and overhand chops one, not into your arm, but kind of over your arm, blocking it, if that makes sense, with the back end of their short sword and their arm over top of you.
I apologize, but I must get through this door.
And I will try to shift my arm so I can get my hand past where they tried to stop me and push the door open.
What's your AC self?
18.
Please describe to me as you successfully dodge three swipes of these short swords that are just coming at you with kind of overhand strikes as this guard advances on you.
Self steps to the side as one of the short swords comes down and then uses that to kind of spin around the guard as a second sword comes down. And then he continues his motion, almost like dancing around the guard, and dodges all three to get back to his original position with his hand on the doorway, ready to kind of push it open.
There's a momentary freeze frame as you have kind of done this Jackie Chan style martial arts dance. And you look over at this guard who is trying to attack you, and you can see their face is melting.
Stop melting.
This makes no sense, but Self just like trying to put the goop back on top.
Yeah. I don't want to touch it, but I'm like, you know.
Smart. At this point, since they were so close behind you, the guards catch up to you. The voice kind of calls out as, "Adherent, guard, well caught in..." Oh my gods. Your attention turns back to the guard that was trying to attack you. And you hear a whirring. And then a couple of clunks and clanks and clockwork mechanisms and springs start to wind up.
You're not a guard.
As the final bits of the exterior of this guard melt away, you see a large, I won't call it a creature, I'll call it a construct. It has a triangular head, long, slender body, and those two swords that it was trying to hit you with, those now appear to be large claws. In front of yourself is a clockwork mantis.
You're not from around here, are you?
As it rears up to its final large height and all those last mechanisms kind of click into place, its mandibles start chittering like crazy, and it lunges at you. Ugh. As the guards say, What's happening? Self and Steve, you know the clock is ticking.
And not just on the clockwork beast.
And not just on this clockwork beast. You have places to go. How would you like to handle this? Are you going to engage in full combat? Are you going to try and get past it? What is your preference?
I really hate to do this, but the guards need to take care of this mantis.
yep, reasonable.
And so what I'm going to attempt to do is kick the mantis and drive it backwards a little bit towards the guards and then get through this doorway somehow.
First, it sounds like you are rolling to kind of like push or trip or something, this get this thing off of you and yes. off of the door specifically. How would you like to propose to do that?
I'm going to attempt to punch it and then use the key point to drive it backwards with my fist of unbroken air.
I love that. Great idea. Give me an attack roll.
14.
Okay, awesome. That will hit. It is a very large creature, and you're not really trying to do damage, so you're not trying to like kind of like get into its innards or such. You hear horrible screeching sounds as all the metal kind of goes up against this obsidian, and a couple of startled shouts from the guards who are now suddenly 5 feet closer to this large automaton than they were previously.
Then I am going to put my hand back on whatever mechanism was in that doorway and try to open up the door and then head through it.
Do you close the door behind you?
I don't know if these guards are part of the guarding the egg guards or just the regular guards. So, yes, I'm going to close the door behind me.
Through this doorway is a set of stairs. In this stairway, you no longer need your little trinket to provide you light because in a very clear violation of all fantasy OSHA rules and handicap accessibility rules, on either side of this stairway, almost in lieu of handrails, are flowing pools of lava leading downward.
The floor is lava. The floor is lava.
And then I will actually jump off the stairs and use my slow fall ability, which actually allows me to glide. And I am going to glide down the stairs as quickly as possible and aim for whatever landing is down there. And then if it continues on at a different, you know, angle, I'll keep going.
Unfortunately, you described a very cool thing. The stair has a lot of weird angles, and you have to do a lot of very cool, like, flips off of the side to, like, reorient yourself to go down all sorts of weird, crazy twists and turns.
I'm also picturing maybe some of, like, the swimmer moves where they have to do the tuck and roll and then push off the...
It's exactly the
push
vibe.
Push off the wall. Okay.
Yes. And you glide downward for a non-zero amount of time. It is as deep as your monastery's inner vault is. But eventually, following this flowing lava, you hit what appears to be the bottom. And in front of you is a grand doorway, intricately carved obsidian doors that are at least two stories high and ajar.
That's against protocol.
So I will move as quickly, safely as I can up to the door and just kind of take a peek through and see if I see anything in there.
I would like to open this up to the table. What's a detail of the hiddenmost chamber in this whole monastery where presumably, I don't even know if you can call it a relic. I don't know that you can call it a piece of history, but something as important as a dragon egg is kept.
My thought is that it's like the animated movie Aladdin when they've touched the gold and they're like hopping from the little stones in this river of lava. So there's not actually a floor. It's just lava, and you have to be like as dexterous as a monk because there are just like obsidian
stepping stones
to move about at least this first entryway of the room.
That is the detail that I would say most sticks out to you, Selv.
All right, I will quietly as I can slip inside and go to that first kind of obsidian stepping stone.
As you enter the room, this large room with molten lava, unlike some of the other places in this abbey, where there's some sort of protective charms against the kind of full heat of lava, it is hot in here.
So I'm imagining this room also has a number of, like, geothermal vents that are sticking out of the lava and just blasting steaming hot air up to the top of the chamber. And alongside the walls, there's these sections where there are just magma falls, like waterfalls pouring out of tunnels leading into this room that just cover the whole room in that magma.
And Selv, as you make your way towards the end of this pathway, you see almost buried in the side of this wall, as if you are uncovering a giant geode. There is this intense shimmering. As all around the walls, the floors, there are shards of obsidian that were like hand-napped and made razor thin that are all pointing in towards the center, where there is a nest made of the same material, holding maybe what used to be the dragon eggs.
And as David said, man, there's a lot of ornate decoration and protection for what appears to be an empty nest.
Are there any other ways out of this area? Because nobody came, at least I don't think anybody came past me while I was coming down the stairs. So any other ways out of here?
This whole room appears to be built kind of exclusively to house this egg, or eggs in a hopeful sense. But you would know from your monastery that there wouldn't just be only one way in and out. There's always good to have an alternate route. You're looking, you're scanning, you're trying to keep the pace up because you know you're late. You know you're trying to catch up. And you look across the room and you really look at one of those geothermal vents, absolutely blasting hot air upwards. And then your eyes kind of follow it up, and there's an opening above it in the rock that this appears to be spouting air up into.
How high above?
Oh, it's up there. There's no way this room is any smaller than, what, 50-foot ceilings? Like, minimum.
Yeah, minimum.
All right. I'll make my way over to that geyser. As I get close to the geyser, does it feel hot?
It feels muggy. It feels wet. There is a smell that is not particularly pleasant, but it's also not like scorch your skin off if you approach it.
Oh, I can't believe I'm doing this.
All right, I take the robe off, and I am going to make some kind of little parachute? Some kind of catching device.
Yeah.
And tie the kind of the arms to my belt so that if I can time it right and get this little hood over the geyser, it will propel me up and then maybe I can grab onto the rock.
Selv, you stand there for a moment with your borrowed robe flung over your head, just drooping all over you, hands extended. I won't tell you how your character's feeling, but at least to me, as the kind of omniscient narrator, looking a little bit like a dweeb. When suddenly, you hear from underneath you a rumble, and very suddenly, a huge gust flings you upwards. And I'm sorry to say, it doesn't fling you to a nice ledge. It doesn't really even fling you to a place that you can grab onto, because this gust of air just keeps pushing you and pushing you upwards and upwards for multiple seconds. Very suddenly, you see sunshine, because it appears as though you have been forcibly ejected from the, I guess, chimney of a building next to the abbey. You find yourself suspended in midair, that perfect moment at the apex of a fall. You are grasped by weightlessness for just a moment. You see the Abbey sprawled before you. And then you feel gravity start to pull at you as you start returning down to the ground. What do you do?
What is directly below me?
A roof. You were ejected from a chimney, so you could, if you kind of angle it right, land on a roof, which is much, at least a little bit further off the ground than the ground itself.
And that's what I'll do. I will land for a, let's do the full-on superhero landing onto the roof and not destroy my knees.
And is that with Featherfall?
Not necessarily Featherfall, but the slow fall, yes.
Oh, the slow fall, yes, excuse me.
That is using slow fall.
Because then I would make you roll to destroy your knees, but as you gently kind of glide down, your feet and I guess your one cool hand as you do a superhero pose hit the slate rooftop. Before you have a moment to even collect yourself, you hear shifting and sliding elsewhere on the rooftop, as if something else is up here with you. David.
Yes.
What does Selv see sharing the rooftop with him this fine day here at the Abbey?
You see a rather small halfling atop the roof with you, and he seems to be shoving something large into a bag that is not big enough for it. You see this halfling with a glorious pompadour and a gold chain around his neck, grabbing the black and red dragon egg of the Mountains of Fire and moving it into a dimensional bag by his side. He looks at you and says, "I'm surprised you got this far, Selv. I wouldn't have pegged you for someone so determined."
"That doesn't belong to you. Return it."
"Ah, finders keepers." And Edgarius pulls something from the haversack at his side and chugs a potion. You can see him begin to slowly disappear from the head down to his toes. And you can see the last motion of Edgarius before he disappears as he spreads his arms wide, revealing a wingsuit, and then dives backwards off the edge of the roof.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hi, everyone. David here with the Midroll. We hope you've been enjoying the episode so far. If you want more of the Reckless Attack crew, come join the community on Discord. The link is in the show notes of the episode and on our website, recklessattack.com. If you want to support the show, head on over to Patreon, where you can get access to our behind-the-screen talkback series, as well as our new series, Reckless a Snack, where we eat snacks and chat about the question of the day. As always, if you like the show, be sure to tell a friend about it too. Thanks so much for listening, and now, back to the episode.
Self, you do not see him. You cannot hear him. Other than, I guess, cackling as he glides off into the distance, but not enough to have an immediate pin on where exactly he is or where he might be heading. You know you have moments. You know it is happening right this second. What do you do?
The only thing I can think of is there was that weird rune on the cart that we know belonged to him, so I'm guessing that's where he's going to be heading. And so, that gives me at least the only direction I have right now. So I am going to get a running start and just leap as far as I can off the roof and use a slow fall. So my version of slow fall allows me to glide, and I am going to make my way as fast as I can towards Edgarius's cart.
you float down and you are back in that same courtyard that you passed through to get inside of the kind of the chapel area itself. And you look around you. There are no guards to be seen, presumably because they all followed you in. But that also means you have a clear path, at least it seems like for the moment, to book it across the abbey.
I am going to be using all of my speed to get there. I'm hoping before Edgarius, but at the very least, roughly the same time as him.
Excellent. The question is, Selv, are you alerting anyone at this juncture? You specifically haven't before. You have, you know, kind of tried to play it cool. You don't know who he's in league with. You didn't know kind of what direction things might be coming. You may not want to let him know that you're on to him or that you're going in the right direction, but also more hands could be helpful. What's your approach?
I am going to alert. There's no guards around because they were all after me. I'm going to hope that there's guards in between me and where I'm going.
Absolutely.
So I am going to, if I see any guards, kind of head towards them, and I will, as I'm going past, just yell,
"Edgarius has stolen it."
On your way towards the group of wagons that first made it to the abbey, you find two guards who are walking towards the entrance to the chapel area. And you notice that they have very stoic faces as they're walking towards you. You recognize that same face on these two individuals as you saw previously inside that tunnel earlier. And as they get closer to you, their arms and legs and bodies begin to shift and roil underneath their robes. And you see the inklings of mechanical pieces begin to jut out from their sleeves.
I don't have time for this.
I'm going to run at them before they have time to actually finish doing whatever transformation they're doing. And I am going to try to dive roll between these kind of mechanical tentacles, get past them, and keep going. In order to do that, I am going to do a quick little acrobatics roll.
Seems reasonable.
That's a 13.
Selv, you jump past these things, and you're able to kind of keep your momentum and roll through them, but one of them is able to extend their mantis claw and catch you just for a moment and rip at your gi and slow you down, throw you off balance to, you know, kind of slow your momentum and make it so that they are able to maybe keep pace a little bit more.
Gotcha.
But you are free.
Okay. In that case, I am going to ignore them for the moment and keep going. And maybe that'll, seeing these creatures will alert some more guards that are actually guards.
And in front of you, as you exit this chapel courtyard, you see the parking lot. All the carts and wagons have
people tailgating.
Yeah, people tailgating. It's a party. You see a giant sign of Pete's Meats. Pack your own tailgate package. And next to Pete's Meats, it's kind of like the first thing, because, you know, it's all about location, location, location. So they're pretty much right in front, right at the entrance of the parking lot. And they have these tall flags, so you can make sure to see where Pete's Meats is. And then behind it, you just see this sea of covered wagons, hardtop wagons, carts. There's some that are pretty souped up, looking pretty nice. And you know in the distance, somewhere in that maze, is Edgarius's cart.
I'm heading towards one of these poles. I am going to pull an old school Super Mario Brothers here. And I will actually spend a key point to do Step of the Wind to increase my jump height and distance. And I am going to leap on top of the pole and then use that to leap off and continue falling / gliding, hopefully bypassing any of these tailgaters that are on the ground that might be getting my way. I'm going to do some athletics here, because that seems reasonable to leap and jump and spin.
I'll give you fling yourself with a flag.
Right, exactly. And I'll give you advantage on that, both for it, for you spending a key point and also for being sick as hell.
Excellent. I will take it. That would be a natural 20 for a total of 23.
Woo. Nice.
you are able to do like a spin move that just like kind of builds up momentum fully horizontal and then use your legs to launch off like a, again, just thinking back to all of the Olympics that I watched, not but a few months ago, of just gain an incredible amount of momentum and you are flying more than falling at this point. I am going to say that you are able to get so much momentum with that natural 20 that you are able to glide and scan the entirety of kind of this parking lot. And very clearly, you can see a cart that already has a couple of, we'll say just beasts of burden. I won't make that character choice for Edgarius, but a couple of beasts of burden that are all, that is already pulling out of the parking lot, seemingly driven by no one.
All right, I am going to glide slash a couple steps on maybe a couple roofs of other carts here to keep going and get to that cart as fast as I can.
And so as you are running across wagon tops, all of a sudden climbing up the wagon you are barreling towards is this giant humanoid who is amping up a crowd next to his wagon. He's like, I'm gonna do it! I'm gonna crush this table! Set it on fire! And he's like pounding his chest. But as he is doing that, he is right in your way. And it seems like he's up here to jump on and crush a table.
A flaming table.
A soon-to-be flaming table.
It's lit. They were ready.
In the time it took you to this say a soon-to-be, yes, it has already been accomplished.
Literally no one in our podcast will get this joke.
I will. I get it. I know exactly what you're talking about. It doesn't matter. Like, we've established this is tailgate behavior. Absolutely. Yeah.
They're right in my way. What I'm going to do is land, jump, put my hands on their shoulders and, like, you know, do the splits and fly over their head. And as I do, I'm just going to yell back,
make better life choices.
And I am going to keep going to that cart and I'm going to launch myself off their shoulders and keep going with an acrobatics roll. That would be a 9.
Ooh. Oh, no. That is another failure, unfortunately. Ugh. What happens to impede your progress in this moment?
So what happens is Selv takes off, does the jump, puts his hands on this person's shoulders, but misjudges their enthusiasm to actually launch themselves off of this cart onto this flaming table. And so actually that guy jumps and moves just as Selv's hands were coming down. And so Selv kind of misses the full plant on his shoulders and hits the roof of the cart and has to roll and gather himself back up for a second before he can continue on. So just losing some momentum there.
This is all happening still only a cart or two away from the kind of the prize, so to speak. And so you would have no problem kind of regaining your momentum just a little bit, but probably with not maybe as much element of surprise as you maybe would have but a moment ago with that failure.
I am going to try something else here, and I am going to yell to the closest people around me. I'm going to point to that cart, and I'm going to yell,
stop that cart! No driver, it's running away!
Very good.
This is one hell of a tailgate!
We will pay that off here in a moment. So, Selv, you as you are yelling this, I'm imagining you're doing this, again, Spider-Man pose, legs up, mid-air, then you land right on the back of the cart that, again, seemingly is not being driven by anyone, but you have your assumptions.
Selv, you finally make your way to the top of this cart that is pulling away without a driver. You take a look, and it seems to be in the same shape as when you left it. Outside of it is moving under its own power, nothing seems to be amiss. Go ahead and make me a dexterity saving throw at disadvantage.
Ooh. Except you have counter advantage.
Ooh.
Because as several tailgaters step in and say, hey, whoa, whoa, hold down, horsey, hold down, slow down, whoa.
Ooh. 26.
Ooh.
Okay, wow.
Your sixth senses begin tingling. Your monk training takes over as you easily dodge a hand crossbow bolt that shoots past your head as Edgarius appears from his invisibility, having tried a surprise attack at you. And he says, "Self, well, you're a feisty one. I wasn't expecting you to find me so quickly. I thought I had this all planned out. But here you are."
"I'm sure you did. Return the egg and you might live through this."
"Ha! I think I'm going to live through this just fine." Edgarius reaches back into the handy haversack and pulls what appears to be a scarab from it. He opens the wings of the scarab and presses a button within, and you can hear these kinds of mechanical latches undoing from further down on the wagon. All of a sudden, the wagon begins to shift side to side as if it's unstable, as if it's letting go of something. And then you can feel yourself slowly rising up into the air, but maintaining that forward momentum. Behind you, you can see some sort of apparatus. A spoiler, perhaps.
And fantasy spoiler,
fantasy
to be clear.
Spoiler.
And oh small, no, spoiler alert.
And small wings appear from the side of this wagon as, under a magical power enchanted by the rune underneath it, the wagon takes flight. And you see it begin to fly upward above the tree line. "What do you think of that, Selv? Pretty fancy, hmm? The pharaohs have done a good job outfitting me for this project."
"Oh, so that's what that does."
And then I am going to leap forward and try to grab Edgarius.
Okay, go ahead and make me an attack roll.
10.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
That is 3 failures already, Selv.
You try and grab onto Edgarius's coat, but he easily takes a step back, a practiced step, as if this was all the movement. Just a quarter inch was enough to avoid your trained grapple. And he tries to kick you off in return. "I think there's only first-class seats on this wagon, Selv. I don't see any coach seats around here." And he tries to kick you off.
Devastating insult.
Calling him poor.
Yeah.
And we're just
yes, the poor.
"The joke's on you. I'd never fit in, coach. I'm too tall."
"Well, you should have brought 2 seats."
What is happening?
I don't know.
We've officially, yeah. You guys got one taste of like high fantasy, and now you're referencing yeah. Delta Airlines. Yeah.
"That's the spirit."
No.
"Off to new frontiers."
Did you say you guys are headed in a southwest direction? Blah, 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 blah. All right.
And the wagon explodes and the story ends.
Yes.
Give me a die roll.
Of just anything?
Yeah, dexterity again.
Okay. 15.
Just fucking barely a success. With that, you both have traded initial ploys, but now combat begins in earnest. I think we all collectively have a pretty good visual representation of what a Selv fight looks like, no matter what elevation, what surface, what, you know, kind of situation it may be. But Edgarius, a total mystery to us. So there's still going to be obstacles. There's still going to be a lot of ups and downs, literally and figuratively, across this combat. But the two of you, Selv, you quickly realize you are facing a formidable combatant. David, can you just paint a picture? You guys are trading blows, are trading feints, are trying to trip and push and subdue and counter one another. What is Edgarius's fighting vibe?
Yes, you are facing a flurry of knives, a whirling dervish, as it's just knife stab after knife stab comes at you. Throwing knives, poison knives, just stabs to the gut. And you are fighting off a bladed devil.
Knife shoes, knife belt, yeah, everything. And
everything, everywhere.
Knife pants.
Out of his hair. Knife.
That's what the Pompadour is for. Knives.
Because Edgarius hasn't been able to pilot his newly aerial craft, it's pretty much just been at its same off-the-ground height the whole time. He hasn't been able to, you know, kind of yank it up, gain altitude. So you guys are still pretty low. And as you guys are getting towards the outskirts of the abbey, you guys come across an archway. You guys are cruising at approximately head to midsection height, depending on whether you are the halfling or the dragonborn in this equation. And you have to immediately do something about this or you are going to be scrunched in half.
I am going to leap up and onto the archway, 1 foot onto the archway, and then jump off and land back on the cart on the other side.
Very cool. What do you want to roll for that?
Sick flips.
I would like to do acrobatics for that.
That seems very good. As long as you describe it as exceptionally flippy.
Then I will actually do a horizontal, like my body goes horizontal as I dive over it and I turn in the air and then roll onto the cart on the other side.
Excellent. Give me a roll.
That is a 23.
Ooh, nice. Thank goodness. So we are at 4 successes and 3 failures.
Okay.
We have 2 more opportunities for you to really foil Edgarius. And it all comes down to whether you have more successes or more failures. So it could go either way at this point. You do your acrobatic roll, your cool flip over this archway, and you see that Edgarius has, presumably, I don't know, have you just hit the deck?
Yeah. Yeah.
He has immediately gotten totally prone and sprung back up by the time you have landed back onto the cart. Edgarius, do you have a snippy retort for him?
Knife to see you again, Sal.
Stab, stab, stab.
Stab, stab. Oh,
that is incredibly annoying. I didn't realize I kept doing that.
Is this what I sound like?
Is this how it is for other people?
So the fight above the aerial cart is continuing, and the two of you have now cleared the abbey. You are now firmly over the Mountains of Fire. And one of my favorite parts of the Mountains of Fire is the ember storms that frequent the area. So given that no one is really paying attention to where the cart is going or where it's flying towards, the two of you quickly find yourselves in the middle of a raging ember storm. You find ash and embers begin to blow towards you as the wind picks up, and all of a sudden you are struggling to keep yourself from lighting on fire as you are flying into the eye of the storm. Self, what I need you to do is to give me a constitution saving throw to not be choked or set on fire by the raging storm.
Well, I do have some inspiration here, and I think I will use that because constitution is not my best. So, con saving throw. That is an 11.
No.
Oh, no. That brings us completely even.
Yep. So as the wind and ash and embers whip about you, Selv, you are struggling to maintain your form as you find yourself being choked by all this ash, and you are feeling the burning of these embers on your skin and on your gi. But you know that Edgarius is struggling similarly. Despite his efforts to stab you over and over, he is not faring much better either. As the sky gets darker, the two of you know that if you don't finish this quickly, neither of you are making it out of this situation alive.
Come on, Sel. Is it worth it, really? Is your life worth this egg? How about this? Why don't we call it even, call it truth, I'll cut you in, all right? This egg's gonna be worth a lot to the right buyer. And if you just let me get it to them, I'll give you what? 1,000 platinum, 2,000 platinum. How does that sound? That's probably more money than you've ever seen working at the monastery.
This egg will be returned safely with me.
Always the hero.
Actually, at this point, if I can jump in and just, if I kind of like blink some of the ash and the soot out of my eyes and wipe my face, do I see the bag that Edgarius put this egg inside of?
Yes. Yeah, so it is still slung around his shoulders.
And he's been pulling knife after knife out of this bag. You don't know how many knives are in yeah. here, but he's thrown at least 30 of them at you throughout this whole fight, and he has not run out.
I'm going to take more of a defensive posture at this point, knowing that just Edgarius has pulled knife after knife after knife out of this bag. And I'm going to wait for the next one that he's going to throw, and I'm going to concentrate on catching it, but not throwing it back at him. I'm going to step forward and use that to cut the rope that is holding this bag across his body so that I can grab the bag and pull it off of him.
Go ahead and give me a sleight of hand roll.
And you can take this an advantage. Here's why. Because you see Edgarius' eyes flash with death and danger. He throws his knife at you in hand, already has pulled another one out of this bag somehow as it is midair. But this is not aimed with quite the same precision as it was previously. You can see he was jostled slightly off balance because tugging at his pant leg is the head, and specifically the teeth, of a very small donkey child, as Hody, the little donkey, has yanked at the pant leg of this very dangerous individual.
It's Hody's first help action.
Yay. So you can take advantage on this. And again, this is for all the marbles.
Yes. How do we get in this position all the time?
Yeah.
All right. Come on, dice. Don't fail me now. 16.
Oh my god!
Please, self, describe the sequence of actions. You are in the middle of a firestorm. Ash is blowing around you, flecks of fire everywhere. The cart you are in is starting to catch ever so slightly. An exceptionally, exceptionally dangerous man is across from you. But in an instant, you know you have your opening. Describe what happens next.
So Edgarius throws the knife just a little bit off balance, and seeing the handle, I was able to grab the handle. I actually jump forward, grab the bag that was holding this egg in it, and then I make to slash at Edgarius's chest. He, seeing the knife coming, takes a step back, which gives that rope just a little bit of slack for me to cut and pull the bag off of from around his back. I hold up the bag briefly and I say,
"Finders keepers."
And then I kick Edgarius off of the cart and just launch him into the air, into the middle of this raging storm. And then I take my seat at the controls and see if I can fly this crazy thing.
Okay. David, is there a final passing phrase, a bit of screamed vitriol, of sorrow, of anything, before his voice is lost to the ashen winds?
Not a very nice thing to do.
Hody gives a hee-haw of appreciation. She has already strapped herself into the seat next to you, is sitting very expectantly. Please describe very briefly you crash landing this thing.
So I grab the reins that are attached to nothing, I guess, yep, right now, and just steer however I think it would go, kind of pull up to level off and try to land wheels down into some kind of crash we can walk away from.
You have to pull, just yank. Your feet are up against the front of this wagon. You are straining with every bit of your might, and cheering you on is Hody the entire time, making truly jubilant donkey noises, and you manage to pull up just in time. Skipping like a stone across a pond, you come to a skidding halt. The winds have stopped. The cart has stopped. Hody's noises have not stopped, but what has stopped is the heist of the dragon egg.
Quick look back. Where's Calaprico?
Don't know.
Calaprico. Buck, 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 buck. You here? Buck, 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 buck.
Sal, seriously? That's how you ended it? Back, 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 really?
That's how it actually ended.
What about that thing in the Kavos beat? The Titan Beetle of Canasta? Where'd we hear more about that? And what happened to Kimberly? You never mentioned Kimberly again.
Well, I wanted to give you the most exciting parts, because I figured you would like those.
Where's my closure, Sal? Where's my resolution? That was a terrible story. At least tell me who won the tournament.
Yeah, that's gonna have to be a story for another time, I think.
From up above you all, From the well opening, atop the horrific, damp, dark cave that the Golden Tree Guilders still find themselves in as we return back to the city of Agmar. You hear a voice ring out.
All right, guys. We have the barrels.
Those of you who are still inside of the cave see a large dark shape be hucked into the hole with a rope trailing behind it as a barrel splashes onto the water, followed by a second barrel splashing into the water.
Caskrin climbs in and says, I would say this is the least dignified way I've ever been pulled out of something, but it's not even in the top five.
You're going to need to tell me all top five of those.
As he is just like sitting in the barrel full of water, staying, keeping his gills underneath the surface and being pulled out of the well by a turtle.
Inside here in the Tomb of the Saint is the entirety of the Verdant Wave Adventuring Guild, but also notably is the Pious, the member of the Bones. Checkers.
Yes.
You notice something.
You notice Pius has your net that you've been calling dibs on the whole time.
That is actually
yeah.
What you notice. That the net, his coveted, beloved, magical item that he has waited 60 episodes to get hands on, something along those lines.
He first saw it at like level 3, I want to say.
Something along those lines is there, still being worn by the Pious. But he would also notice that it is glowing a bright blue. And then everyone slowly turns at the stone mosaic mural depicting the saint who was supposed to be buried here. Part of that relief, not being held, but as part of one of the details, is a magical net that looks quite similar to the one wrapped around the Pious. And that is Rule in this week's episode, everybody. See you next time.
Woo!
Wow.
Tiger still doesn't get his net.
No.
Okay, so things everyone...
Give everyone else things they have to do, and I'll just say...
That is good and correct.
Yeah. And then Val shows
because
up.
Valette Bonette is here.
God. Now I'm just imagining an entire side adventure where everyone is the equivalent of the Golden Tree Guild, but also a Bonette.
Yeah.
And it's like Chequette and fucking Cassette and...
Salvette.
Yeah.
Salvette and Valette are twins, actually.
Yes.
Yes, obviously. Fraternal, but nonetheless. Okay. So
now, I am going to lean into Cassette.
Yeah,
I know. Why do you repeat everything I say to you?
Really good.
Does anyone have a pencil?
okay. So.